Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world.
Today on the show, Anna Mateo and Brian Lin bring you the Health and Lifestyle Report. Then we continue our American History series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Katie Weaver.
Pope Francis released a letter to Roman Catholics around the world Monday, condemning sexual abuse by church officials and efforts to hide it. He demanded responsibility be taken, but he did not say how he might punish those involved. He also did not propose a plan to stop such wrongdoing. Francis asked forgiveness for the suffering of victims. He said all Catholics must be involved in the effort to stop abuse and attempts to hide abuse. He denounced the clergy culture that has been blamed for the crisis. Church leaders are accused of being more concerned with their self-image than the safety of children. With shame and repentance, Francis wrote, we admit we were not where we should have been, that we did not act in a timely manner, realizing the magnitude and the gravity of the damage done to so many lives. He added, we showed no care for the little ones. The Vatican released the 3-page letter before Francis's trip to Ireland Saturday. Francis's letter was a reaction to American and Irish pressure that he take a strong position on the worldwide abuse crisis. That pressure increased after he traveled to Chile in January. There, he dismissed victims' accusations of abuse as calumny, meaning lies to hurt someone's image. The Pope's trip to Ireland was expected to deal with sex abuse in the church. However, it became an even bigger issue following reports about one of the Pope's most trusted church officials in the U.S. Several people have accused the retired Archbishop of Washington, Theodore McCarrick, of sexually abusing young people and adults in training to enter the clergy. In addition, a Pennsylvania grand jury last week reported that at least 1,000 children were victims of about 300 clergymen over the past 70 years. The report said generations of high-level church officials repeatedly failed to take measures to protect children or punish suspects. Also, investigations into sex abuse continue to grow in Chile. Chilean police have raided church records to try to learn what it has known about its abuse of clergy. In his letter, which was released in 7 languages, Francis spoke about the Pennsylvania report. But church officials said the message was meant for people around the world. Francis wrote, no effort must be spared to create a culture able to prevent such situations from happening, but also to prevent the possibility of their being covered up. Some supporters of the victim said the letter was not enough. Anne Barrett Doyle is with the research group Bishop Accountability. On Monday, the group released information on Irish clergy accused or found guilty of sex abuse. Mere words at this point deepen the insult and the pain, she said of the Pope's letter. She also said Francis should order the release of names of all priests who have been found guilty under church law of abusing young people.
Italian actor Asia Argento is among the leading activists of the hashtag MeToo movement against sexual abuse in Hollywood. She was one of the first women to publicly accuse film producer Harvey Weinstein of abuse. Now, a young actor and musician says Argento sexually assaulted him. The New York Times reports that Argento recently reached a financial settlement with the accuser, Jimmy Bennett. Bennett, who is 22, reportedly had filed documents describing the claim of assault and his plan to sue Argento. Bennett says Argento had sex with him in a California hotel in 2013. He had just turned 17 years old. Argento was 37 at the time. The age of sexual consent in California is 18. The documents say the experience harmed Bennett mentally and hurt his career, the Times reported. The New York Times says it received court documents that included a picture of Argento and Bennett in bed together. Three people close to the case said the documents were real, the Times reported. Argento reportedly agreed to pay Bennett $380,000. Argento and Bennett co-starred in a 2004 film called The Heart is Deceitful Above All Things.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report. Drinking enough water is important to our health. If we want to operate at our highest level and feel great both mentally and physically, we need to stay hydrated throughout the day. But often we don't.
People may go through their days dehydrated and not even know it. Dehydration can make you sick. Extreme dehydration can lead to death. However, many side effects of dehydration are not life-threatening, but they can still affect your health. In fact, you may be suffering from some of these side effects without knowing that dehydration is the cause.
First, what is dehydration? Dehydration happens when you use or lose more fluid than you take in. Your body doesn't have enough water and other fluids to carry out its normal functions. On the U.S. Geological Survey Water Science School website, experts explain how much of our bodies are made of water. Jeffrey Utz is a doctor of neuroscience and children's medicine at Allegheny University in Pennsylvania. He writes that different bodies have different amounts of water in them, and that amount changes throughout our lives.
Babies have the highest percentage of water in their bodies. When we are born, our bodies are about 78% water. By the time we turn 1 year old, that amount drops to about 65%. Adult men are about 60% water, while adult women are about 55%.
Your body type matters too. The amount of muscle or fat you have affects the percentage of water in your body. People with more fatty tissue have less water than people with less fatty tissue. Now let's talk about how dehydration affects the body. Experts on the website health.com explain the signs of dehydration.
You have bad breath and bad skin. Bad breath is a sign that the mouth does not have enough saliva. This increases bacteria and results in bad breath. And for healthy skin, it is important to drink a lot of water. Skin doctors warn that skin creams only do so much. The best way to hydrate your skin is from the inside out.
You feel tired. If you feel tired during the day, your body may be telling you to drink some water. One doctor on health.com explains that when you are dehydrated, your blood pressure drops, your heart rate increases, and blood flow to the brain slows. These can all make you feel tired. This doctor adds that when your muscles don't get enough water, physical work can be more difficult and tiring.
Your workout could be affected. Our bodies often do not know the difference between hunger and thirst. One of the experts on health.com advises high-level athletes on kinds of foods to eat. That expert is Amy Goodson. She explains that when you exercise while dehydrated, your body uses stored carbohydrates faster than if you were fully hydrated. She adds that once you finish exercising, your body will want those carbohydrates back. This, she warns, may lead to overeating.
Your brain works poorly. When our bodies do not get enough water, blood flow to the brain slows. This can cause several problems. You may get in a bad mood. Every little thing gets on your nerves or angers you. You may have a difficult time focusing. You may not be able to think clearly about a problem. Dehydration can also cause headaches.
You suffer from muscle cramps. When your body does not get enough water, it sends out an emergency signal to protect the most important organs. So, the body sends the fluids in the body away from non-important parts of the body, like the muscles. This can lead to painful muscle cramps.
Okay, so how much water do you need? The amount of water you need to stay hydrated depends on many conditions. On average, an adult male needs about 3 liters of water every day. An adult female needs to get about 2.2 liters of water every day. Keep in mind, this doesn't have to come only from drinking. We also get water from the foods we eat, especially from fruits and some vegetables.
However, some people need to drink more than others. Those who exercise every day should drink more water. Anyone who drinks a lot of caffeine or alcohol in a day should drink extra water as well.
If you are recovering from a sickness, you should drink more water than usual. And if you work outside or in hot conditions, make sure you drink enough water. And that's the Health and Lifestyle Report. I'm Anna Mateo.
And I'm Brian Lin.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. We tell the story of the 38th President of the United States.
Mr. Chief Justice, my dear friends, my fellow Americans, the oath that I have taken is the same oath that was taken by George Washington and by every president under the Constitution. But I assume the presidency under extraordinary circumstances never before experienced by Americans.
Gerald Ford was sworn into office on August 9, 1974. Ford was vice president to Richard Nixon, who had announced the day before that he would resign. If Nixon had not resigned, he might have been removed from office. Congress had been moving to charge him with corruption in the Watergate case. At his swearing-in ceremony, the new president spoke about the nation's future.
My fellow Americans, our long national nightmare is over. Our Constitution works. Our great republic is a government of laws and not of men. Here, the people rule.
He went on to say,
as we bind up the internal wounds of Watergate, more painful and more poisonous than those of foreign wars, let us restore the golden rule to our political process, and let brotherly love purge our hearts of suspicion and of hate.
Gerald Ford became the only leader in American history to have served both as vice president and president without being elected. Richard Nixon chose him as vice president in October 1973. That was when Nixon's former vice president, Spiro Agnew, resigned because of criminal charges that he failed to pay his taxes. When Nixon himself resigned, Ford became president. Ford was a longtime congressman from the state of Michigan. He was well liked by his congressional colleagues. His education was in economics and political science at the University of Michigan. Then he attended Yale Law School. During World War II, he served as a naval officer in the Pacific. After the war, Ford entered politics. He was a member of the Republican Party. He was first elected to the House of Representatives in 1948. He won re-election 12 times. Republicans in the House elected him the minority leader during the administration of Democratic President Lyndon Johnson. Ford was still minority leader when Richard Nixon, a fellow Republican, was elected president in 1968. In his leadership position, Ford helped win approval of a number of Nixon's proposals. He became known for his strong loyalty to the president. It was no surprise then when Nixon named Ford as vice president. Gerald Ford was an accidental president. He came to office in a sudden turn of events. Almost as suddenly, he had to decide what to do about the former president. After Nixon left office, he could have been charged with crimes for his part in covering up the events of Watergate. Instead, 1 month after Nixon resigned, President Ford settled the question. He pardoned Nixon for any crimes that he might have committed. The pardoning of Nixon made many Americans angry. Some believed he should have been put on trial. They thought he might have answered more questions about Watergate if he had not been pardoned. Ford said he pardoned Nixon in an effort to unite the country. For a while, though, the pardon only seemed to intensify the divisions.
And I wondered whether anybody had brought to your attention the fact that the Constitution specifically states that even though somebody is impeached, that person shall nonetheless be liable to punishment according to law.
In October 1974, President Ford appeared before a congressional hearing on the pardon. He gave a strong response to questioning by Democratic Representative Elizabeth Holtzman.
Mrs. Holtzman, I was fully cognizant of the fact that the president, on resignation, was accountable for any criminal charges. But I would like to say that the reason I gave the pardon was not as to Mr. Nixon himself. I repeat, and I repeat with emphasis, the purpose of the pardon was to try and get the United States, the Congress, the President, and the American people focusing on the serious problems we have both at home and abroad. And I was absolutely convinced then, as I am now, that if we had had this series, an indictment, a trial, a conviction, and anything else that transpired after that, that the attention of the President, the Congress, and the American people would have been diverted from the problems that we have to solve. And that was the principal reason for my granting of the pardon.
Anger about the pardon was still strong when President Ford made another controversial decision. He pardoned men who had illegally avoided military service in the Vietnam War. Most of them were not sent to prison. Instead, they were offered a chance to do work for their communities. Many of the men, however, did not accept the president's offer. Some stayed in Canada or other countries where they had fled to avoid the draft. President Ford received greater public support when he asked Congress to limit the activities of the nation's intelligence agencies. He hoped better control would prevent future administrations from abusing the constitutional rights of Americans as Nixon had done. On another issue, Ford, while serving as vice president, had described inflation as America's public enemy number one. He had supported several measures to fight it. As president, however, an economic recession forced him to cancel some of those measures. Inflation decreased during the recession, but unemployment increased. On foreign policy issues, Ford kept Henry Kissinger as Secretary of State. Kissinger had won much praise for his service to Richard Nixon, including in the opening of diplomatic ties with Communist China. But Kissinger had also received much criticism. Critics accused him of interfering with civil liberties in the name of national security. They also accused him of supporting the overthrow of the Marxist government of Salvador Allende in Chile. By the time Ford became president, the United States and the Soviet Union had taken steps to try to limit the spread of nuclear weapons. Nixon and Soviet leader Leonid Brezhnev had signed two such agreements as part of the détente policy to ease Cold War tensions. Relations with China were also less tense than before. American policy in Southeast Asia, however, had failed. Involvement in the Vietnam War had officially ended the year before Gerald Ford became president. But fighting continued between South Vietnam and communist forces from the North. The peace agreement, signed by the United States and North Vietnam in 1973, left South Vietnam to defend itself. By 1975, South Vietnamese forces were clearly in danger of defeat. President Ford tried to prevent a communist takeover. He asked Congress to approve $700 million in military aid for South Vietnam. Congress said no. The American people were tired of paying for the war. Saigon, the South Vietnamese capital, fell to communist forces on April 30, 1975. President Ford ordered the rescue of American citizens and South Vietnamese who had supported the American efforts. Few people who saw those struggling to escape Saigon will ever forget that day. Terrified Vietnamese were screaming for help at the American embassy. Everyone was pushing, trying to escape the city. Some held on to overloaded military helicopters as the aircraft tried to take off. As a signal to American citizens to prepare to leave, Armed Forces Radio had played the song White Christmas. Some were to go to an apartment building where a helicopter would pick them up from the roof. But other people also tried to get onto the helicopter, a scene captured in a famous news photo of the fall of Saigon. The former South Vietnamese capital was renamed Ho Chi Minh City. In the Middle East, Henry Kissinger led negotiations after the 1973 Arab-Israeli War. Israel agreed to give up some captured territory. In return, the United States promised not to recognize or deal with the Palestine Liberation Organization unless the PLO met certain conditions. In September 1975, Israel and Egypt signed an agreement that included permission for American civilians to act as observers along the ceasefire lines. Henry Kissinger was praised for his peacemaking efforts, though peace in the Middle East would remain a challenge for future administrations. At home, things seemed better as the presidential election campaign of 1976 began. That year marked the nation's 200th birthday. The United States was not fighting any wars. Unemployment remained high, but inflation had eased. Most importantly, Gerald Ford had led the country through the difficult period after Watergate.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.